Thanks, Luca, for inviting me, and thanks for giving me this weird-looking stick. Very great to be here. I'll visit Parameter again. So before I start my topic today, I would like to take this chance to announce a book. So this book is called Differential Geometry and General Relativity. It is by Cambin Liang and Bin Zhou. So this is a very famous Chinese GR textbook. And what I did was I translated this book into English, and it just got published earlier this month. And I have a copy over here. Just listen. This is a very influential book in China. Oh, you want to take a look? Because the first author, Liang, was very important for Chinese GR community. He was in Chicago in the early 80s, worked with Bob Ward and Bob Garage. And he was basically the one who introduced this modern geometric language of GR to the Chinese physicist. Before that, it was really known in among the Chinese physicist. And this book is very good. It is designed for making everything as accessible as possible. A lot of examples, elaboration on the subtleties of concepts. So it's really good for beginners. And besides translation, the second author, Professor Zhou, and I also revised the book comprehensively. We had a lot of updates, mainly on the sections on gravitational waves and cosmology, because there are many developments during the past decade. Everyone in some institutes should be able to get the online version for free, I think. Feel free to check it out. This is Professor Liang, the first author. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, so couldn't really see the English version being published. But I hope his work will benefit more people around the world learning GR, and hopefully getting more students into this field. Let how this did to me. Okay, so my topic today is basically also about differential geometry. This is the work I did with my collaborator, Mantos Garridas, and also my advisor, Rob Lee. So there might be some terminology in the title that's not familiar to everyone. So let me start by giving some background. So normally when we learn differential geometry, so we start from a manifold, and we say that there could be different structure you put on top of the manifold. And the most simple one you can put on it is just a metric. And in this case, we have a Riemannian geometry, or a pseudo-Riemannian geometry, depending on the signature. And the transformation on this kind of manifold form a group called diffeomorphism. And if you want to ask what are the covariant quantity that's transformed covariantly under diffeomorphism, and the answer is those are the Riemann curvature tensors and the all kinds of covariant derivative of that and all kinds of contraction of those. So those are well known. But there's another kind of geometry. We can put not just a single metric, but a conformal class of metric on a manifold. In this case, what we get is a conformal geometry, and also appeared many places in physics, for example, in the ADS-FT context. On the conformal boundary, you don't have just one metric, you have a conformal class of metric. And in this case, you don't have just the diffeomorphism as the symmetry, also you have this vowel transformation between the elements in the conformal class. So you can ask a similar question: what are the quantities that's transformed covariantly under the stiff times vowel transformation? And the answer would be, it is very sparse. And it's extremely hard to construct such a quantity. So, the simplest one is, of course, the vowel tensor. It is vowel invariant in any dimension that we know. And in three dimension, there is a tensor called Cotton tensor. I denoted by C here. Which is vowel covariant. In 4D, there's a tensor called Bach tensor, which is vowel covariant, vowel and diff covariant. But that's all the tensor people knew before 1984, until Pfeffer and Graham. Oh, answer a question?
Yes, if you put the metric together with the scalar field, together with a vector field, the vector field acts like a connection for the vowel transformations, don't you get a general?
That's exactly the point I will I'll talk about. Exactly. You're jumping the gun. So in this case, just without talking about that connection, Fermi and Graham, they provided a construction that let people systematically generate all kinds of well, covariant quantities in higher dimension, you know, all kinds of dimensions. So what it found is that in each even dimension, there exists exactly one irreducible well, covariant tensor, I mean, other than the well tensor. And the 4D, in 4D, it is the Bach tensor. In 6D, there's something called the second obstruction tensor. I'm denoting them by omega here. And in any higher D, even dimension, there exists exactly one such a tensor. So this is a nice construction, but compared to the covariant quantity in the Riemannian geometry, it looks just awkward. So a question we can ask is, can we do any better than that? And the answer is yes. So if we introduce another structure called a well connection, and then you can put a structure not just the conformal class of metric, but equivalence class of metric and connection. In this case, you get something called vial geometry. And the symmetry is still div times vial symmetry, but the covariant quantity under this construction, under the symmetry, will be something called the vial Riemann tensor. And you can also define a vial covariant derivative and all kinds of derivative of that acting on the vial Ricci tensor or Riemann tensor, and all kinds of construction of that will all be a div times vial covariant. That compared with the Riemannian geometry case looks exactly the same. So this is a more, so in this case, the vial geometry gives us a more natural representation or realization for this div times vial geometry. So what did the Fermi Gram do in their construction is that they go to some ambient space, which is two-dimensional higher than the original manifold. And then they define the obstruction tensor from there and prove a lot of theorems. And you can induce a conformal geometry at the codimension two. So here we're going to show that you can generalize that construction. And then by a very similar procedure, you can induce not conformal, but the vial geometry, also with vial connection, at codimension two. And in this case, if you're in the holographic context, for example, some field theory living in this codimension two submanifold will be organized in a very well covariant way. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So I will start by review a little bit about well geometry, and then I'll introduce what is well ambient metric. I'll introduce first what is Fermi-Gram ambient metric, and then how does it generalize to well ambient metric. And then we can define what is so-called well obstruction tensor in that construction. And then at the end, I'll talk about how does it play an important role in holography. Any question before I move on?
Yes. So there's tons of examples of Riemannian structure naturally showing up, and then you gave some examples of conformal geometry showing up naturally. Do you have examples for vial geometry naturally showing up in like familiar context to physicists?
Well, you can talk about a field theory on the vial manifold. It's not really discussed a lot in physics, but what I'm going to advocate is that it will be a better arena for discussing some kind of field theory at the end.
Okay. And then one related question. Mm-hmm. You say the construction involves codimension two spaces, which makes me think of a flat space conformal boundary.
That's a very good point. I will mention that at the end.
Okay.
So I know what you guys are interested in.
Yeah.
Okay. So just a brief review on well geometry. So under well transformation, the metric transform in this way with local scaling. I'm noting the factor by b to the minus 2 over here. And then a simple fact is that the derivative, the covariant derivative of g, wouldn't be covariant under the vial transformation because you have this this log b term being generated. So the simple ways to save that is to introduce a connection which also transform inhomogeneously like this. And then the combination of novel g minus 2ag will be some object that transform covariantly. So that implies that in this context, in vial geometry, it's more natural to introduce not the Lovici-Vita connection, which is metric compatible, but you can introduce a metric with some vial metricity like this. That's more natural. And then furthermore, you can also absorb this vial connection into the Nabla. and define something called the Weyl Lobachevitov connection, this Nabla hat over here, and that is a measure compatible. And then for any tensor that has a specific Weyl weight that transforms Weyl covariantly with Weyl weight WT here, the action of this Nabla hat acting on that will be also Weyl covariant with the same Weyl weight. So this is nothing but the same analogy of what you have in the U1 gauge connection, for example. You can absorb the gauge connection into the derivative operator and get a covariant derivative operator. So nothing is really fancy here. But if you introduce such an operator, derivative operator, with metricity, the connection coefficients will be certainly different from that of Lobachevitov connection. You can see if you work it out, besides the standard Christoffel terms, you also have some extra terms with the Weyl connection involved. And you can also talk about what is the curvature defined through this Nabla hat instead of the Lobachevitov connection, Nabla, denoting that with a circle here. So the difference will be, so this curvature quantities with hat and the curvature quantities with a circle will be different by a lot of terms, of course, with the Weyl connection involved. But the upshot is that the hatted version of these curvature quantity will transform covariantly under Weyl transformation, exactly because it includes these A terms. And then under the Weyl transformation, it will generate a lot of inhomogeneous terms, which cancels what generated by the Weyl transformation of these Lobachevitov version of the curvature. So everything will be organized in a covariant manner. So that's a very brief review of Weyl connection and Weyl geometry. So let me introduce what is the Weyl, what is the ambient space first, and later we'll go to Weyl ambient space. So the simplest example of ambient space is just a flat ambient space. You can just start from Minkowski spacetime in d plus two dimension. And as we all know, a hyperbola in this Minkowski spacetime, describing this way, give you a d plus one dimensional ADS geometry. And oh, by the way, so I mean the signature one comma d plus one. So this will be the Euclidean ADS. If I mean two comma d, for example, that will be the Lorentzian ADS. So the signature is actually arbitrary. So to describe this in a more nicer way, we can convert the Minkowski metric in terms of this this cone form, and then at any constant little l that give rise to an ADS geometry, this described by this G plus. So the this is just a pure ADS. So G plus can be casted into this sort of a Feynman-Graham form in this Z coordinate. However, this Z coordinate, although it's very familiar, it doesn't cover the whole flat spacetime. It only cover whatever is inside this null cone, because obviously z is singular at z equals zero, which is exactly this null cone. But if you take z and l go to zero simultaneously, but with z over l being a fixed number, it is actually well defined. So the way to make it like a continuation of this coordinate is that we can just choose another coordinate t, which is defined to be L over Z, and also define a rho to be negative Z squared over 2 for later convenience. And then the flat space time now can be written in this form. So this is the T rho coordinate. And having, oh, by the way, so each constant rho surface over here is described by a cone like that, and the rho equals zero surface is exactly the blue null cone over here. So having this coordinate, so we can talk about how do we get a codimension two geometry. So basically, you can take any hypersurface that intersects this null cone, and the intersection will be a codimension two, like a circle. So if you talk about the induced metric on that codimension two geometry, it will be look like that. It's already like conformal to a spherical metric. And with just a factor, which is a function of t as a function of x. So what we can do is just to pick a representative in this conformal class, which is to choose t just to be a constant 1. And you can show that under this diffeomorphism, which is basically just a rescaling of the coordinate t, what happened is the induced metric will be transformed in this way. And that's exactly the vowel transformation that we expected. And in this way, we really get a conformal class of metric conformal to this spherical metric at the boundary. So, but a more clear way to describe this is to not to consider the circle as being living here, but as an isolated surface being embedded into here. And this map, embedding map, phi, will be changed if you perform a diffeomorphism in the ambient space. And although that's just a coordinate transformation, what is induced at the codimension 2 geometry is that it gives you actually a vowel transformation of the metric. So that's the simplest example. And what Pfeffer and Graham did is to take it in a more general case, not the flat spacetime, but a Ricci flat spacetime. So now you can take any M tutor to be Ricci flat. And then you can still write the G tutor in this form, where the G plus now is not the specific form you just saw earlier, but it could be just any function. So now the Ricci flatness condition for G tutor can be translated into the statement of G plus that it satisfies some Einstein equation with a negative cosmological constant. And that is exactly what you expected to have the equation motion in the ADS slice. So that will be the bulk physics, one dimension lower than the ambient. And then, in other words, this G plus is an Einstein metric. So the G plus is not the pure ADS anymore, but you can still cast it into the Fermi-Graham form in this z-coordinate. And as usual, it's not well-defined at z equal to 0, and we can do this continuation again and make it write it into this form in this t-rho coordinate. And then now this gamma will be some arbitrary function. And you can, since it's a function of x and rho, you can expand that order by order in terms of rho. And induced at this codimension 2 geometry again, you get the leading order of gamma. So that could be pretty arbitrary. This is how you get, in general, a conformal class of metric. Not conformal to a specific metric, but you can conformal to any kind of metric. But that's how you get this conformal manifold at codimension 2. And since we have this Ricci flatness condition, what you can do is you can solve for the solution to the this gamma order by order. And if you solve it in the leading order, that will give rise to something called the Skelton tensor. And at the second and the third order, you'll find there's actually a pole at 40 and 60 respectively. So actually, other than pole, there are also some finite terms. So these poles are very important in Fermi-Graham construction because it is exactly these poles, the residues of these poles, that give rise to the unique irreducible vowel covariant tensor, beside vowel tensor, in the specific 2D, some even dimension. And it has a vowel weight 2k minus 2. So what did they show is that they can actually define such a quantity through the curvature of the ambient space by taking a series of rogue derivatives on some quantity, on this some component of the ambient Riemann tensor. And then this guy, they show that this is exactly the vowel covariant quantity. And then you can show that the residue of this guy will be the same as the residue of the gamma k in the metric expansion. In other words, you can just read off the pole in the gamma expansion and then found this obstruction tensor. So this pole Oij tensor here is called obstruction tensor, and they called this omega ij with the pole the extended obstruction tensor. But later I will I'll refer to both of them as obstruction tensor when there is no confusion, just for convenience. And you can see that in 4D, that is exactly the Bach tensor that people knew about before, which is inside this parenthesis for omega 1. And you also have the property that the obstruction tensors are symmetric and traceless. So this is what Fermi-Graham did. And but as I said, that give you some vowel covariant or conformal covariant quantities, but not as natural. So what is the more natural way is to include the vowel connection. And the way we modify the Fermi-Graham expression is that we start from the perspective of ADS-FT. So because there, we know that some vowel transformation at the boundary correspond to this kind of diffeomorphism in the bulk. This is called vowel diffeomorphism. And under this diffeomorphism, which is basically just a scaling for the z-coordinate, the if you just take the Fabian-Gram form of the ADS metric, it won't, the form won't be preserved under this transformation because the dz term will generate some log b term, not really covariant. And usually what people do in the literature is that they also let x coordinate also to transform, and then you can solve for that order by order so that the form of the FG, this bulk answer is preserved. But a more natural way to do that is actually proposed by Luca over here and my advisor, Rob Lee, in the paper. So what did they do is they just put a little structure AI over here, modify the answers from here to here. And then under this vowel diffeomorphism, as long as you're denoting this A and gamma in terms of the new quantities A prime and gamma prime, and then the form of the answers is actually preserved. So this is a very nice observation. And then motivated by that, we just need to substitute the FG version of the G plus in terms of this WFG version of the G plus. And then transform that into this T rho coordinate. It looks like a metric in, like this. And compared with the metric we saw before, there are some other contribution over here from the A. So these are the new terms coming into the metric answers. And since now we have two structures, not just the gamma ij, but also this ai, both of them can be expanded order by order in terms of rho. So at the codimension two geometry, we will expect not to just have an induced metric gamma ij zero, but also something coming from the leading order of A. And we'll see that this is exactly the vowel connection that we expected. So the bulk vowel diffeomorphism, the local rescaling of Z, now in this ambient space becomes the transformation like this. So you have the T and the rho transformation, both being rescaled in this way. And then the form of the vowel ambient metric, this 19 over here, is preserved as long as you have this transformation over here. And you can see that since we can expand the gamma and A both order by order, any higher order, any order of gamma here is transformed covariantly, and it has a specific vowel weight for each order. This is what you can't see in the PBA transformation because there it's not organized in this vowel covariant way. And for the higher order A, starting from order one, it also gives you a vowel covariant organization, except the leading order A0 transform inhomogeneously. And that's exactly like a connection. And to see that more clearly, we can go to this frame. We can define this plus minus frame. And then the vowel ambient metric can be written in this simple form. And so this is a dual frame. The corresponding vector frame, vector basis, look like this. So you have this D plus and D minus being null vectors. And you have these DIs. So these DIs actually spans a distribution, which is some subset of the tangent bundle of M tilde, this ambient space. However, you do notice that these DI, if you compute their commutator, they will give you some plus and minus lag because of this A is involved. So in general, this won't be an integrable distribution. And it will only give you a hypersurface when this A we included is flat. So basically F is like the curvature of A, and by the Frobenius theorem, only you can get an integrable, like a hypersurface, when this is when F vanishes in this case. And that's actually important. Later we will not assume that we have integrable distribution. So to see how the vowel geometry is induced in codimension two, the metric part is easy. We can still just induce the metric at codimension 2 and see that under vowel diffeomorphism, it indeed transformed in this vowel transformation way as we expected. But for the connection, it's interesting to see that we have, if we take a Lovici-Vita connection in the ambient space, it is Lovici-Vita, it is metric compatible here. And if we take the connection coefficient and induce it at codimension 2, what happens is you don't really get the standard Christoffel symbol for gamma 0. You also have some contribution from this A0 terms. And that looks exactly like what we showed before, the connection with a vowel metricity. So what happened is at the codimension 2, it induces a connection noted by Nablu 0 here, which is not a Lovici-Vita connection, but a connection that satisfies this 30 with a vowel metricity. And you can furthermore absorb this vowel connection into the Nabla by defining a vowel Lovici-Vita connection. So all of these tells us that the structure induced from the ambient space to codimension 2 now is not just the induced metric, also induced the vowel connection, and also the Lovici-Vita connection give you a vowel Lovici-Vita connection. So also the vowel diffeomorphism induced at codimension 2 are the vowel transformation exactly. So this tells us that we don't really have just a conformal class of metric, but what we call it is the vowel class, which is the equivalent class of the pair of metric and connection. And then from the ambient space, which is a Riemannian manifold, at codimension 2, it gives us a vowel manifold. So this structure of vowel class just naturally appears. And then since we just modified the metric by adding this AI structure, we didn't really change anything else. So we still have the Ricci flatness condition. So you can solve for the Ricci flatness condition, also order by order here, just like what you did for before without the AI. So now you can see that the solution will be more involved because you have a lot of new terms due to the A. But one thing you can observe is that so everything in the leading order, like you still have the pole. Omega 1 and omega 2 still have the pole. And the pole part are just modified by upgraded to the vowel covariant version. So all the curvature quantities and all the derivative quantities are just become the corresponding vowel version with hat added. So these are just becomes vowel covariant quantities, the hatted version. And also higher order A terms will be involved in the solution, like the A1 here and A2 here, but they don't contribute to the pole, which is important because all that comes to the pole are the A0, which are the vowel connection that modifies these quantities to the vowel covariant quantities. But higher order A doesn't contribute to that. So now if we take a look at the Riemann tensor of the ambient space, so the only non-vanishing quantities there are these components. So we're in this minus plus coordinate. So you have this minus ij minus component minus ijk component and ijkl component. That's the only non-vanishing component. So one gives you this omega hat that we just stole from the equation. And this c hat is the vowel Cauchy tensor, which is the standard Cauchy tensor, but with hat. So this is a vowel covariant version of that. And then this is the vowel tensor. So all of these, so you can also read off them from this metric of the curvature 2 form. And all of these are transformed covariantly and their vowel transformation. So this is what you don't have before in just the conformal geometry. And actually, we have a more general theorem that we showed in the paper. If you take not just the component of the ambient Riemann tensor, but also all kinds of derivative of that, you will see that any kinds of derivative, if induced at codimension 2, give rise to vowel covariant quantities. So not just the obstruction tensor, anything will be vowel covariant with the vowel weight 2s minus minus 2, where s minus is the number of the negative component in these r plus 4 components. So what does it say is that if you take any diffeomorphism covariant quantities and you induce at the codimension 2, it gives rise to a vowel covariant quantity. So this is very powerful. And then we can still define this extended viral obstruction tensor, which is the viral version of the obstruction tensor defined before, by taking not the rho derivative, but the minus derivative over here, similar to what they did. And that indeed induced at codimension to still a viral covariant quantity, but it's not just covariant in a specific even dimension, but it's covariant in any dimension with a viral weight 2k. And it's still symmetric and traceless. And what we showed is that indeed the pole of that, so that is divergent at even dimension, and the pole of that, the residue of the pole, will be equal to the residue of what you have in the metric expansion at the specific order, with just the factor to k factorial over 2. So that shows that indeed now in the metric expansion at each order, whatever the pole you have, the residue of that, you read it off, that will be the viral obstruction tensor. So, but that was basically a top-down perspective of talking about this viral ambient construction, because we started from a d plus 2 dimension, and then we showed that it induces a viral geometry at a d dimension. So this is like going from higher dimension to lower dimension, and I just gave you this viral ambient metric motivated by the WFG gauge, but I just gave it to you. Indeed, it worked out. You can show that everything is covariant at codimension 2. But a more formal way to talk about it is actually a bottom-up perspective. This is basically saying that you can construct the viral ambient space from a d-dimensional viral manifold. You can start from a d-dimensional viral manifold, and what you do is you can consider a principal bundle with the structure group R+, where R+ is the group of the local viral scaling. And then you take this line bundle as initial surface. You can define you can find that there is a well-defined initial value problem with this redshift flatness condition as the equation of motion. And then provided the data at gamma zero and A. So you can show that there's a uniquely defined bulk metric, which is exactly this viral ambient metric in this form, 41. So in that way, you can actually show that this is not just randomly given to you, this metric. It's actually a uniquely defined ambient metric. This is how Fermi-Rheim constructed their ambient construction originally in a very formal way. But this discussion is pretty long to really show that initial value problem. So I won't really dwell that over here. So if you're interested, that's discussed previously in our paper. And yes,
I have a question. The codimension 1 initial value problem from the point of view of the ADS specifies gamma 0 and A, but also a subleading term in the gamma expansion metric, the gamma k in your language. So is that you're uniquely determined from the Ricci flatness conditions?
So this is similar to that. So it uniquely defines each order of gamma from this Ricci flatness condition, which is the same as solving the bulk equation of motion as you just described.
Yeah, but when you solve the bulk ADS equation of motion and starting from the conformal boundary, you need a gamma zero, but you also need to independently specify a subleading term in the expansion. Then it's true that all the gammas are going to be specified in terms of the gamma zero, but there's another independent series.
Oh, you're talking about the second series.
Yeah.
That's a very good question. So here, we're just talking about, I wasn't talking about to reconstruct the whole bulk or ambient space in that sense. It's just an asymptotic region can be constructed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so indeed, you need some interior data for the second theory.
Okay, thanks.
So that was a description for or ambient, viral ambient construction. And so now we have the so-called viral obstruction tensors. I'm going to talk about how it plays an important role in holography. Especially, it's kind of surprising that it just appeared in this holographic viral anomaly, which is usually overlooked. So before I talk about that, before I switch the gear, is there any question? Okay, so let me talk about holography, which is probably more interested. More people would be interested. So before I talk about holography, let me just talk about Weyl anomaly in general. So you'll see that the way I talk about Weyl anomaly is slightly different from what people will talk about Weyl anomaly, because I'm on the background of a Weyl geometry. But I hope that you'll find this is more natural to define things. So if we have just a field theory living on some d-dimensional background with a Weyl geometry, so we don't have just a metric, we also have a Weyl connection, right? So under a Weyl transformation, so your classical action probably will be invariant, but this partition function will pick up a factor with the exponential factor, this A, which represents the Weyl anomaly. So what happens is here, not just a gamma will transform, so both gamma and A will transform under a Weyl transformation. So you have this A, this Weyl connection, being a built-in structure of the system, and you don't need to worry about something like restore the Weyl symmetry by introducing the scalar field, dilatons, or all of that. So this is more natural and organizing things in a Weyl covariant way. However, now since you have two different background fields, not just one background field, you need to expect two different currents, right? So for the metric one, it's certainly just an energy momentum tensor. But for the Weyl connection we introduced, there will be also another current. We can call it the Weyl current. So the complete word density in this case will not be just the trace of the energy momentum tensor, but also you have the divergence of the of this Weyl current. And that will be zero classically, but in the presence of a quantum anomaly, Weyl anomaly, there will be some contribution on the left-hand side, non-vanishing. So, but one thing we just saw from the holographic case is that this A mu we introduced, they are not really determined by the equation motion in either the bulk or the ambient Ricci flatness condition. So those only give you the solution of gamma, of the metric order by order. So A also have a series, but it doesn't satisfy any equation motion. So those are basically pure gauge. So you can treat them as free data you put into the system. So they're not really dynamical. And so in this sense, what you find is that in the holographic case, you can define a new improved energy momentum tensor. So in that way, you can basically absorb the contribution from the Weyl current into it. And then you just need to worry about one term, which is the trace of that improved energy momentum tensor. This is very similar to the case where you have an anti-symmetric energy momentum tensor, and you can improve it by adding the Bluff-Fountain tensor, and then it will be symmetrized. And that's exactly the analogy of that. So later, when we talk about the energy momentum tensor, what I mean will be this improved energy momentum tensor. So now let's go to the holographic dictionary. So what does it tell us is, if I want to consider some field theory living on the boundary, I can talk about some bulk on-shell effective action. And usually the Weyl anomaly is derived from the holographic renormalization procedure. You can introduce a cutoff surface at not z equals zero, but z equals to some small constant, and then you can extract the infinities, and then there will be leading divergences. You introduce counter term to cancel them, and at some specific even dimension, there's a log term, and that log term will give rise to the Weyl anomaly. So that's the usual story. But here we need to be very careful, because we have this A mu in this A mu, this mode included. So this EZ here, this basis vector, it won't be just DZ. It will be some DZ minus some A contribution. So in general, it won't be really an integrable distribution. So you don't really have a hypersurface at some, for example, constant epsilon, where epsilon is not zero. So in this case, the boundary, z equals to 0 boundary, is not really part of a foliation because of this non-integrable part. So the standard cutoff regularization wouldn't be really available. So what we do is we actually want to use the dimensional regularization. In this case, we consider the dimension to be not just the integer, but formally as some complex number. And then you can still do the regularization, remove the leading order divergences, and then add some even dimension, some order of the bulk on-shell action expansion. You'll find not the log term, but a pole term. So that will be like 1 over d minus 2k, where 2k is that dimension. So that extracts infinity, equivalent to what we do when you have a cutoff surface. But that's not available in this case, so we're using the dim rag. And in this case, you can just talk about the Weyl anomaly by a Weyl transformation of that pole term. And it's actually first pointed out by Luca and Rob that this can be read off directly from the kth order of the on-shell expansion. So you can just solve for what is the on-shell action order by order to the kth order, and that gives rise to the Weyl anomaly in the 2k dimensional. So the simplest case is of course the 2D case. And we know that in 2D, the Weyl anomaly is just the Ricci curvature. And here we see that it is not the Ricci curvature, but the Weyl Ricci curvature, because there's a hat. That's because we're in the on Weyl geometry. It is covariantized automatically. And also I'll denote it by a P here instead of R. A P is the trace of the Skelton tensor. And the reason will be clear very soon. So if you go to 4D, the Weyl anomaly will be these terms. So you have a polynomial of the Skelton tensor. So you can also write this in terms of the standard way, where people usually write it as two parts. One is the Euler density, the other is a contraction of the Weyl tensor. But here, usually Euler density is called the topological, that's the type A Weyl anomaly. And the Weyl tensor here is called the type B Weyl anomaly because it's Weyl covariant. Here, both of them are Weyl covariant because we have Weyl connection included. So this Euler density is promoted to the Weyl version of Euler density, automatically Weyl covariant. So you can still write it in terms of these two terms, but now I want to express that in terms of the Skelton tensor. And also you need to notice that there's a contribution from a higher order A, so A2 is involved here. However, it only appears by a cohomologically trivial term. So it doesn't really contribute to the anomaly because it can be removed by a local counterterm. So in fact, just the first two terms will be what you call the Weyl anomaly in 4D. And in 6D and 8D, we also do the calculation, and it is very complicated, especially in 8D. But it will be, I'll express them in terms of Skelton tensor. And you'll see that the obstruction tensor coming in 60. So this is the omega one, the first obstruction tensor. Usually people write the 60 Weyl anomaly in terms of the Riemann curvature, and that will be a long expression, like three lines long. But now in terms of Skelton tensor and obstruction tensor, it's just the four terms. And 60 anomaly is very well known before in many literature, but 8D Weyl anomaly, I don't think it's, well, people don't really have motivation to compute that in 80, but if you really compute that, you see that the second obstruction tensor comes in. And in terms of the Skelton tensor and the obstruction tensor, this can be written in this compact form. If you do it in the Ricci or Riemann tensor, like what people usually do, or like what I did before, the expression would be like two solid pages long. But in terms of obstruction tensor, it's like this simple. So it seems like obstruction tensor give us a very natural way of expressing the Weyl anomaly. So it's like a natural building block of Weyl anomaly. And let's compare the 2D, 4D, 6D, and 8D expression of Weyl anomaly. It can be written in this compact form. So you can see there's certainly a clear pattern. And for 10D well anomaly, for example, you don't need to do any calculations, and you can already expect that there will be some terms. For example, there will be a term with 5P, and there will be a term with omega 3, for example, and there will be just six terms. And the coefficients you need to settle down by calculation, but the independent center charges are determined by this pattern already. You can also expect, is there a general form for an arbitrary dimension well anomaly? I think there should be one, but so far it's kind of hard to see, but you can already see a pattern, even for the coefficients, right?
James, I have a question.
Yep.
There was a very recent paper by Luciano Bonora claiming that they missed a central charge in 6D in the past, in their analysis of their cohomological analysis of Weyl. How many central charges do you have here in 6D?
So the holographic case has some constraints on the central charges.
Sure, but how many
therefore,
terms appear? Four, you said?
Here we have two. But yes, in the general case, non-holographic case, four.
Four.
Yes. Just like in 4D, you should have two independent center charges, but here the holographic constraint only give you one. So yeah, that's how we see that obstruction tensor plays a natural role in Weyl anomaly, although people didn't really notice that, but it looks like it's a very natural building block. Okay, so as a summary, so what did I talk about today? I started talking about a Weyl ambient construction from a two higher dimension, so like a D plus two dimension Riemannian geometry, and then you can show that it induces at D dimension a Weyl geometry. So you have this Weyl class on the manifold, and then the symmetry, diffeomorphism symmetry in D plus two dimension induced at a codimension two give you not just diffeomorphism but also Weyl transformation. And then the corresponding covariant quantities under this Weyl construction is very similar. It's not just like the conformal case where you have just some specific tensors. And so this Weyl ambient space let us induce this Weyl covariant geometry at the codimension two, and also we can define the so-called Weyl obstruction tensors. And the pole of the asymptotic local ADS bulk metric at some 2K dimension, some even dimension, is exactly the Weyl obstruction tensors, which turns out to be the building block of a Weyl anomaly, holographic Weyl anomaly. This is a little surprising. And if you compute what are the contribution of this A terms in the Weyl anomaly, so the leading order A0 plays a role of a Weyl connection, covariantize the Weyl anomaly, but the subleading term, they only have cohomologically trivial contribution. So although they appear in the bulk, you put it in there as free data, they don't really affect what is the result of a Weyl anomaly. So that's kind of nice. So there are many interesting directions we can go from here. So the first thing is, as I mentioned, that these are, so the Skelton tensor and the obstruction tensor looks like the natural building block of Weyl anomaly, but this is for the holographic case. For general case, non-holographic theory, any field theory, is it still true? So it could be true, but to really answer that question, I think you need to understand this geometric structure underneath this more in a deeper way. But from the holographic case, we already see some hint that indeed there should be some cohomological interpretation for Weyl anomaly. Especially for type A of anomaly, in the recent work I did with a collaborator, Mark Klinger, and my advisor, Rob Lee, we kind of sorted out the case for type A Weyl anomaly. But for type B Weyl anomaly, you have these obstruction tensors, which kind of make things non-topological. So it's a little bit hard to see for now, but this is what we're still working on. Another perspective is how symmetries are induced at the boundary. So usually, when you have a boundary, when you have a bulk, or in this case, ambient diffeomorphism, at the boundary, so in this case, we have not just a diffeomorphism, right? We also have the Weyl symmetry. That sits in a bigger program that been advocated recent years called the corner symmetry, also proposed by Luca here and Rob. So this, although this is a specific example where we have diff times vial, they have a bigger group, but can that be, can this ambient construction be more general? Can that give us a bigger symmetry? For example, there's an interesting paper by Laurent and collaboration in 2021. They have this vial BMS symmetry at the boundary, and this ambient metric, basically, vial ambient metric, is giving you part of that symmetry. Basically, you just turn off the supertranslation part. So one question to ask is, can we generalize this vial ambient metric so that supertranslation is also included? That would be very interesting. And even bigger symmetry, where Luke and Rob called the universal corner symmetry. So it would be interesting to ask, can that give us that a richer structure at the boundary in terms of symmetry? And also an interesting picture you can draw just from this vial ambient picture is that we can consider this codimension to sphere over here as the asymptotic boundary of some ADS slice, but also it can be considered as some formal boundary of some DS slice if you just go across that rho equals zero surface. So it sounds like this could be also a natural way to describe not just ADS CFT correspondence, but also DS CFT correspondence. And one can also approach this codimension too in the null direction. And recently, there's a paper by Luca with Laurent and Rob, sort of fits in that category. They're talking about this null direction, also very interesting. So it seems like this ambient picture puts all these kind of things together, unified in the same codimension two picture. And of course, there's a very popular holographic program in the recent year called celestial holography, which is a codimension two picture. So it would be very interesting to ask, can this vial ambient construction be applied in describing and in discussing the holography of this in the celestial case? Because there's also a codimension to a similar picture.
But do you always take your ambient space to be Ricci flat?
Well, that's the thing for now. How do we generalize that? So that's why we don't have, for example, super translation at this codimension two, right? So maybe a more general way, so just from a symmetry perspective, one can consider going to, not vial ambient space, but a more general ambient space, which may contact to a celestial holography. So that's something I would be interested to see. And besides that, you can also compute charges in this WFG gauge, so through the covariant phase space formalism. Recently, also by Luca, there's a paper. I'm referring to Luca too much because he has a lot of work related to bio for some reason. They did this calculation for ADS3 case, and it will be interesting to see if there's a more general higher dimension calculation for that, or is there an underlying ambient story for that? I think that would be interesting. And lastly, there's a long time confusion for people. How do we define CFT on a non-conformal flat background? Right, because you don't have the conformal killing vector, so it's not really a CFT anymore. There's some proposal that it could be not a CFT, but a vial field theory, but very little is known how to discuss that. And seems like this ambient construction, vial ambient construction, give you this natural vial geometry at the codimension two. That would be a suitable arena for studying if you want some vial field theory. And indeed, we have seen that in this case for an asymptotic local ADS slice, which it's not necessarily Ricci flat, not necessarily conformally flat. The gamma zero can be arbitrary, not just some conformally flat metric. You can still define this induced vial geometry at the boundary. So there could be not just the ADS-AFT correspondence, but some asymptotically locally ADS vial field theory correspondence. So that's something I think are worth to explore. So this whole project that I'm doing is motivated by Vowel Anomaly, and it sits in the intersection of three very fascinating subjects. So today I basically talked about two perspectives of that. One is the vowel geometry, the other is the holography. But there's a third perspective from the cohomology point of view, which is also a fantastic story I don't have time to talk about today. But if anyone's interested, you can check out this paper by me and Mark and Rob. But basically the point is, by studying any perspective, it gives us insights on the other two perspectives. So hopefully studying vowel anomaly will give us a deeper understanding on all of these subjects. Thank you. And also, for those people who are late here, check out this book.